to the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Today is September 13th, 2017. I don't have a guest with us today, so I am going to read some of the nuclear alerts and some of the news that's out there and pontificate as I do, as you know. One of the things I would like to do, though, is remind you that we do have legislation still sitting in the House of Representatives, H.R. 3053. We don't know when it's going to be submitted. They haven't told us. But we definitely need you to contact your representative and tell them not to vote for this thing. I have been busily faxing the 6 pages that Donna Gilmore has presented on her website, SanOnofreSafety.org. There's a 6-page printout that you could use that's the reasons why to oppose it, and it's really addressed towards our legislators. So I printed it out, and I've been faxing it to the Democrats. At least I'm starting with the Democrats because they might be the ones to crack, who have co-signed on this thing. It's kind of a shock that we have Democrats who are willing to do that. Not really. I mean, I don't know why I say shocked anymore. When we recognize that where we're at in this country is not who we think we really are. Maybe that's the conflict between the neo-Nazi gang, eh? So Lao Tzu, I think we need to have a Lao Tzu reading here. And I was poking through and I couldn't pick one out. And I think I've read this one, but I really like it. I love this poetry. So I'm going to read number 33 again. Knowledge studies others. Wisdom is self-known. Muscle masters brothers. Self-mastery is bone. Content need never borrow. Ambition wanders blind. Vitality cleaves to the marrow, leaving death behind. Pretty amazing that we are in this human condition. A poem can be written, I don't know, what is that, 3,000 years ago, and it still sings to our heart. So that just goes to show us that, you know, we really are not that advanced as, you know, we haven't really come. 3,000 years is a little blip in time, and we're doing our best to erase it, that's for sure. So let's move on to the current nuclear events. And we do only have 4 of them. This is the current event notification report for September 13th, 2017, from the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. There's only 4 of them. The first one was Hemlock Semiconductor Operations Oh, as usual, safety equipment failure. Just like everything else in this industry, failure is common. They don't make things to survive there. They make things to charge the U.S. government for. So the second event is in Dresden, Illinois. Potential unable to safe shutdown accident mitigation in Dresden, Illinois at the power reactor. Standby liquid control system pipe failure. On September 12th, 2017 at 1131 CDT, both Unit 3 Standby Liquid Control System, which is SLC, subsystems were declared inoperable for a through-wall leak on the common discharge piping. With both subsystems inoperable, the SLC system was unable to fulfill its safety function. This event is reportable under CFR, blah, 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 big, long stuff, okay? That's all that it says. With both trains of SLC inoperable, the licensee entered into an eight-hour action statement to restore at least one train to operability. If unable to do so, the plant will then enter a 12-hour shutdown action statement. So I guess we'll have an update tomorrow telling us whether they were able to get it back up to operation or if they're going into a 12-hour shutdown. I would think they would notify us. Oh, great. Right here, Columbia Generating Station, Washington. Potential uncontrollable radiation release. Accident mitigation. Accident event date, 9/12. That was yesterday. At what time? 1911. Event time, 1228 PDT. Wow. On September 12, 2017, at 1228 PDT, reactor building secondary containment pressure momentarily rose above the technical specification limit. Secondary containment was declared inoperable. And TS Action Statement 3.6.4.1.A was entered. The pressure rise was due to unexpected isolation of the supply and exhaust valves in the reactor building ventilation system due to an electrical transient on the power panel feeding the valve operators' solenoid pilot valves during maintenance. The cause of the electrical transient is under investigation. The reactor building differential pressure controller restored the building pressure to within limits. The control room operators reopened the reactor building ventilation supply and exhaust valves. Secondary containment was declared operable at 1228 PDT and TS Action Statement 3.6.4.1.A was exited. So I guess that's called accident mitigation. I wonder if they opened them up manually. Here's another power reactor. Emergency declared, Cook, Michigan. Wow. Date, 9/13. Notification date, time, event was 0:47. So it was at 12:47, I guess, huh? Or 0:47, that's how they read it on the 24-hour clock, I guess. 0:47 is what it, 0:47 EDT. Wow. At 0:47 EDT, the licensee declared a notification of unusual event under emergency action level S8 due to the actuation of the letdown relief valve, which resulted in the reactor coolant system leakage to the pressurizer relief tank exceeding 10 GPM. GPM. I don't know what that is. Do you guys? You could call in. The number is 718-717-8106. If any of you want to give me a little ringy-dingy and we could have a conversation about anything that I've talked about or any of our guests have talked about. So let's continue with this. After we read this, I'm going to look that up. 10 GPM exceeding gallons per minute. Maybe that's what that is a good guess. The plant was in mode 3 at the time of making preparations to proceed to cold shutdown to support their refueling outage. Operators were in the process of reducing reactor coolant system letdown from 120 GPM, must be gallons per minute, to 45 GPM when the letdown system relief valve lifted. The relief discharge to the pressurizer relief tank at approximately 12 GPM. Operators isolated the letdown line, which reduced the leakage to approximately 1 GPM. Staff is in the process of determining where the 1 GPM leakage is from and evaluating the basis for terminating this unusual event. Oh, we're so glad they're looking into it. You do realize, of course, it's in hot standby. That's what it's in right now. Its current mode is in hot standby. And you do realize this is only 15 miles away from Hanford, folks, and all of it sitting on very active earthquake faults. These people are complete lunatics, to be honest. Every time I read about this stuff, how can they choose to allow themselves to be so blind to the harm that this is doing to our planet? Actually, I think it just goes across the board. It goes back to the secrecy issue that I keep talking about. Let's move on to September 12th. I know I read it a couple days ago when I didn't, 2 days ago, so this is the last one. Curtis Wright Flow Control Company in Curtis Wright, Alabama. What was this? Interim evaluation of deviation, defects, and non-compliance. Potential defect in gray boot socket contacts. The following was received in an email. This letter is issued to provide an interim notification of potential defect in certain lots of gray boot socket contacts supplied with EQ quality gray boot connector kits. On March 16, 2017, Curtis Wright Nuclear Division Huntsville operation was contacted by Georgia Power Vogtle Nuclear Power Plant concerning a potential defect where the socket contact tines were in a relaxed state. Although we have completed some testing and verification activities, additional testing is now in progress and will provide necessary information to complete our evaluation. Current testing will be completed and final conclusions made on May 31st, 2017. At this time, based on test results, evaluation, and operation experience, Curtis Wright is confident that any potentially affected gray boot assemblies will continue to perform their intended safety functions. As such, if the final recommendation is to replace the potentially defective socket contact, this can be accomplished during subsequent routine maintenance activities. This notification is being made to comply within 60-day interim reporting as defined by 10 CFR 21.21A2. And please contact Samuel Bedslow, EGS Product Manager at 1-256-690-7852 for more information. And there's two other numbers. I'll not read those. The following is provided via email, and I guess this is an update. And then there was another one, an update on 6-9. I think we read about this several months ago. Remember, there was a long laundry list of affected nuclear power facilities. I mean, practically all of them. The list is long. Arkansas Nuclear 1, Bruce Nuclear Power Development, Brunswick, Callaway, Calvert Clips, Clinton, Columbia, Cooper, C-Team CRT, Davis-Bessie, Diablo Canyon, Duane Arnold, Farley FMM, Fort Calhoun, Gentilly, Gina, Haddock Neck, Harris, Indian Point, Kewaunee, LaSalle, Limerick, Millstone, Nine Point Mile. These are all the affected nuclear power plants. I'm not finished. I'm going to finish, though. North Anna, Anakie, Oyster Creek, Peach Bottom, Pilgrim, Point Beach, Prairie Island, Quad Cities, River Bend, St. Lucie, San Onofre, Sizewell B, South Texas, Summer, Turkey Point, Vermont Yankee, Vogtle, Waterford, Wolsong, and Zion. Okay, so let's see what the latest update is to them taking corrective action. On May 31st, Curtis Wright Nuclear Division, Huntsville operation, issued a letter documenting final findings regarding a potential defect concerning model GB1 gray boot kits supplied with two tinned silver-plated 12 to 14 AWG contacts. Please find that letter attached. Pursuant to the attached letter, please find the attached list of affected purchase orders. For additional information, please contact Samuel Bedslow, AGS Product Engineering Manager. And then the list of affected sites were all those nuclear sites affected. Okay, and then what is the latest on 9/11? It was updated, it says. At initial issuance, the evaluation documented in report EGS TR880708-15 presented metallurgical analysis, as well as thermal, functional, and seismic testing. This report has been revised to include cycle aging, functional testing, and pull-out force. Test results confirm that affected socket contacts will continue to perform their intended safety function throughout their qualified life. Based on these findings, no further actions are recommended for the potentially affected utilities previously notified. Any potentially affected socket contacts, either in inventory or installed, are acceptable for use in their intended safety-related application. It is recommended that all utilities confirm that installation and handling of gray boot assemblies is in accordance with installation instructions EGS TR880707-02. So after all of that, they're saying, don't worry about it, folks. There's a little bit of a defect, but hey, it's going to keep working. Believe us. What was the original problem? Let's see what they said it did. Continue where the socket contacts. A potential defect where the socket contact lines were in a relaxed state. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's remember that. But let's just be very clear. We're on a need-to-know basis, and we certainly don't need to know. That's for sure. There was a retracted event. Something happened. What was it? Accident mitigation. Where was this one? A power reactor, Duane Arnold, in Iowa. The event happened on 8/1, and so they retracted it. High-pressure coolant injection system steam valves failed to reposition. So let's see. What did it do? It resulted in a condition that caused the high-pressure coolant injection system to be inoperable. And then the retraction on 9/11 says the purpose of this notification is to retract a previous report made on 8/1. NRC notification was initially made as a result of high-pressure coolant injection, inborn steam isolation valve position found to be inadequate. Subsequent to the initial report, Net Extra Energy Duane Arnold has determined that the condition observed on 8/1 for MO-2238 did not exist prior to removing the system from service for pre-planned testing, but was observed during the post-maintenance testing. Consequently, the failure does not meet the reporting requirements. So don't worry, folks. They just saw it after they replaced it, and you were never in a threat. So don't worry about it. Another lost source. Well, that's quite interesting. So if anybody wants to give us a call, the number is 718-717-8106. Don't be shy. You can call me. It's okay. I'll be nice. I really won't be mean. We may not agree, but I won't be mean to you. Or maybe you'll interpret it that way. I don't know. Or maybe it's not worth you bothering. But please give us a call, 718-717-8106. There is a lot going on. I'd really love to have a chat with my listeners about this, anybody listening to the show. Otherwise, you're just going to have me read these news stories and pontificate as I see fit, because that's why I'm here, folks, to give you some information on what's going on. I found this to be an interesting story today. This was about the nuclear weapons. I found it on Nuclear News, nuclear-news.net. And that is the news site from Sean McGee and her Courtois. And then what's that? Christine McPherson. I think that's the other person writing this page. But this was an abstract, and this was from the Worldwide Deployment of Nuclear Weapons from the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. And it was from Hans M. Christensen and Robert S. Norris, pages 289, 297, August 31st of August 2017. So this is pretty interesting. It's an abstract. I'll read you the abstract. It's about the nuclear weapons in the world. The authors estimate that as of mid-1917, there are nearly 15,000 nuclear weapons in the world, located at some 107 sites in 14 countries. Roughly 9,400 of these weapons are in military arsenals. The remaining weapons are retired and awaiting dismantlement. So we have 9,400 active nuclear weapons. Nearly 4,000 are operationally available. Some 1,800 are on high alert and ready for use on short notice. Like, we need 1,800 nuclear power plants to end a war. Like, for real. Okay. This article reviews the locations of nuclear weapons in all nine nuclear armed states, as well as those of the U.S. weapons deployed outside of the United States. Hang on just one second. Okay, let me get back to this. So the first one is Russia. We estimate that Russia stores nuclear weapons at 48 locations, by far the largest number of any nuclear armed state. This is a significant reduction from the 100 sites that was used in the late 90s, 250 in the mid-90s, and 500 in 1991. Wow. The United States stores, I wonder if this 48 sites means one weapon per site. That's a question. I've been working on coordinating with Sean McGee a time to pre-record an interview. He lives in Ireland, and I'm in Eugene, Oregon, so that means a live interview is probably not going to happen. So I remember to ask him about this. I wonder, stores nuclear weapons at 48 sites, so I wonder if that's one weapon per site. That's the implication here. Let's assume that from here on. We'll make that as a given. The United States stores nuclear weapons at 18 sites. That can't be, because look at this. We own more than half of them. The United States stores nuclear weapons in 18 sites, including 12 sites in 11 U.S. states and another 6 sites in 5 European countries. Britain and France. London and Paris have reduced their arsenals and limited where they're and excuse me, I beg your pardon. London and Paris have reduced the size of their arsenals and limited where their weapons are deployed. Britain has only one type of nuclear weapon, the Trident II submarine-launched ballistic missile. The missile and associated warheads are located at 2 facilities in Scotland, where warheads are also serviced in 2 factories southwest of London. For an interview for an overview of British nuclear forces, see Kirsten and Norris. So they talk about that. France has, if he gives you the whole, if you go to their site, you can just click on the links. France has retained two types of nuclear weapons, SLBMs at a submarine base in Bretagne and air-to-surface missiles for land and carrier-based aircraft. France also has a warhead production and maintenance complex at Val-Duc. We estimate that the French warheads are spread over seven locations. We estimate they are spread over seven locations. In the United States, they didn't talk about this, has 18 nuclear sites. The United States stores nuclear weapons at 18 sites, including 12 sites in the U.S. states and other. But remember before when we read that article that said most of our nuclear weapons are on submarines? So I wonder where those 18 sites are. All around the edge of the country, that's for sure. Researching nuclear weapon storage is difficult in China. We're talking China now. Researching Chinese nuclear weapon storage is difficult given the almost complete secrecy, the complete official secrecy that surrounds China's nuclear forces. An overview of Chinese nuclear forces, see Kirsten and Norris, Chinese Nuclear Forces 2016, also in the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists in July. And there's a link on this page if you want to see that report. Moreover, as is the case with other nuclear-armed states, Western governments say very little about what they know. We cautiously estimate that China may have nuclear warheads at 12 facilities. Nearly all of China's 270 nuclear warheads are concentrated in the central nuclear weapons storage site known as 22 Base and located in the western part of Shaanxi province in central China. Pakistan. Our friends or foes in Pakistan, don't know. Islamabad is quantitatively and qualitatively increasing its arsenal and deploying weapons at more sites, yet the locations are difficult to pinpoint. Pakistan is rapidly expanding its nuclear arsenal of 130 to 140 warheads and an increasing portfolio of delivery systems. Great. India. As with Pakistan, we have found very little reliable information that indicates where India's 120 to 130 nuclear warheads are stored. For an overview of India's nuclear arsenal, see Kirsten and Norris, who gives you the link, Indian Forces 2017. Based on available unclassified sources and satellite imagery, we cautiously estimate that India stores nuclear weapons at least five locations. So this is the last one. The last but not least, and as you can guess, the least information, Israel. Israel is a wild card because of the opacity of its nuclear weapons program. Like other nuclear-armed states, however, Israel has been modernizing its arsenal and probably also its storage facilities, but we have no idea. Yeah, this was written by Christina McPherson. So thank you, Christina, for posting that, because this kind of, in this whole little talk about, there's no talk here in North Korea, I guess because we don't know, and this was written, this is unverified North Korea's weapons. I don't know. Banning weapons of mass destruction, including nuclear ones, the theme for 2017, September. So that was that symposium, I think, that Chuck went to in Europe, and that was that whole thing. And they can ban weapons all they want. They're still going to use them. The United States is still using them ourselves every day, selling them. And I consider depleted uranium weapons to be nuclear weapons. They're not without nuclear harm. And in fact, as Chris Busby has shown, long-term radioactive contamination is more toxic than then really you can, you know, the damage from it and being very, very close is evident. But the long term, and in fact, a friend of mine and I met a friend from school yesterday, and she got breast cancer since I haven't seen her in 3 years, and she had to look at 3 doctors. They took out something. They said they couldn't even really see what it was, but you have to take it out anyways. And it was in her lymph glands. To me, this whole thing, you know, and then when I mentioned, well, you know, you did grow up near Van Nuys, which had the first nuclear bomb. We have had Fukushima bombarding us. You do live in the Northwest where Hanford has, you know, we get all kinds of it, and we're getting bombarded from Fukushima. And she's like, wow, I never really thought of it. And that's exactly right. And if you say that to anybody, people, the denial that nuclear harm is causing people's illness, cancer is everywhere. And that's what she commented about, was the fact that her cat and her dog and her neighbor's cat, they both died of cancer. My cats have died of cancer. Since I moved up here to Eugene, Oregon, I had some cats that came with me. They both died of cancer. So to say that we are not being affected and not being bombarded is incorrect. And in fact, I would strongly suggest that if you go to YouTube, you look up Organic Slant. He does some postings that are pretty awesome. He actually has a garden. He takes his Geiger counter out there, and he found something. He found a camera lens last. He did a video where he had this old camera, and he discovered that they made them out of thorium. This camera, that he put one lens. He has this really good Geiger counter with a hand thing that goes over it. It went up to like almost 3,000 counts per minute. 3,000 counts per minute from the lens, this old lens. And so he was advising people to check. If you have these old cameras, find out what was made in that glass, because they used to put thorium in some of that glass, highly contaminated thorium. It just happened. I don't know how he came upon it, but it's only like a 2-minute video. It's called, his name is Organic Slant, and he's on YouTube. And it was a shock. This stuff is everywhere. They have put it everywhere, folks. This is not an accident. So, I mean, it really is up to us to find it out in our own communities. So there's, you know, not much we can do about it. So I want to take a look at Hanford and see what's going up at Hanford. And we'll see what they tell us. And I will venture to say that they're going to say everything is fine, just fine. We'll hit the news button. And this was 20 hours ago. More space available for Hanford's radioactive waste. Wow, Hanford is being sued for allegedly violating Public Records Act. Really? Okay, how about this one? EPA's long-term plans to manage Hanford office is in limbo. 14 hours ago, Tri-City Herald. These people are awesome. DOE gets another pass on estimating Hanford's cleanup. Let's open up this one, the Hanford limbo one. We already know that this is so beyond outrageous what is going on at Hanford. It's like a death wish, honestly. That's why the Columbia Generating Station, oh, it's in potential. We have equipment here that's failing, but don't worry, we're fine. It's going to work out just perfectly. Move along. We'll let you know. Tri-City Herald, and it's called EPA Long-Term Plans to Manage Hanford Office in Limbo, written by Annette Carey, September 12, 2017. The Environmental Protection Agency has named acting managers in the next 8 months at the Hanford Project Office. Excuse me, I'm going to clear my throat. There you go. We got a little bit of an article to read. I want to make sure I could do it. No permanent plan. Let's read this first sentence again, folks. The Environmental Protection Agency has named acting managers for the next 8 months at the Hanford Project Office. No permanent plan for management of the office has been announced. Laura Bulow, an environmental scientist at the office, will be in charge for the next 120 days, EPA said Monday. Dave Enan, an environmental engineer with the office, has been assigned to fill in for the 120 days after that. Dennis Falk, who served as the Hanford project manager for 8 years, retired at the end of August, with EPA environmental scientist Craig Cameron placed in charge until the start of this week. EPA is a Hanford regulator and one of the three agencies that sets cleanup plans and deadlines for Hanford under the legally binding tri-party agreement. The Hanford EPA office in Richland is also responsible for oversight of the Department of Energy's Idaho Environmental Cleanup Project and some non-government Superfund sites in Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Alaska. Staff in the office has dropped to four scientists and engineers with some additional support from Superfund managers in Washington, D.C. who were assigned to Hanford projects. However, Falk assured the Hanford Advisory Board before his retirement that Hanford will remain a high priority for EPA in the Northwest region. Really? With four scientists and engineers, four people in the office at the EPA, that's who's handling it? Wow. The wrecking ball crew, what can we say? Four people. And I wonder what Superfund sites they're handling in Oregon. Probably the one in that Hope told us about, Hope Gaster told us about, the ATI site in Albany, Oregon. I wonder if that's it. Well, let's look at this one. Hanford's being sued for allegedly violating the Public Records Act. That's just par for the course for the nuclear industry, folks. State law requires cities to have an obligation to be transparent about how they spend taxpayer dollars, and the city of Hanford is being sued for allegedly not fulfilling that obligation. The city of Hanford. The Policy Research Institute recently filed a lawsuit in Kings County Superior Court against the city of Hanford for refusing to comply with the California Public Records Act. The lawsuit stems from the Institute's work on its TransparentCalifornia.com website, which publishes the pay and pension data for nearly 2.5 million California public employees from over 2,000 government agencies. According to the Transparent California Research Director, Robert Fellner, Hanford is the only city in Kings County and the only city with a population of at least 20,000 statewide that has refused to provide the basic name and salary information requested. The California Public Records Act is emphatic in its purpose to make public all records concerning governmental affairs, Fellner said. Hanford's refusal to provide an accounting of city employees and their taxpayer-funded salaries is a clear violation of the law. Despite having provided the information for the 2014 year, Fellner said the city has not produced records documenting the names and wages of its employees when Transparent California requested the same information for 2015 and 16. It is inconceivable to claim that a city government with hundreds of employees and millions of dollars in payroll does not possess records that identify the names and wages of its employees. The lawsuit asked the court to compel Hanford to comply with the CPRA and provide a copy of records documenting city employees' names and salary information so that it may be published online at transparentcalifornia.com. The lawsuit includes copies of a series of emails sent back and forth between Fellner and city clerk Jennifer Gomez. The emails start in June 2016 with Fellner formally requesting the names and salaries of city employees for the 2015 year. In the email, Fellner tells Gomez that the city could provide any report, record, or combination of the two that contain employees' names and salaries. Gomez emailed Fellner back saying there was not a single report with all the information you have requested.
Lie!
fire. She did, however, provide a state controller's office report that listed job titles and salaries, and other and another report that lists all employees and their job titles. Fellner told Gomez in an email that the information she provided was not sufficient, and she replied that the city simply had no records of the kind he was asking for and had supplied the only information she had available. In June of this year, Fellner sent another email request to Gomez asking for the names and wages of employees for the year 2016. Again, Gomez provided Fellner with the state controller's office report, but told him she was not able to obtain the type of reports he requested. They did give us the information in 2014, which really undercuts their argument. They have no way of doing so now, Fellner said. Fellner said he sent an email on August 30th to Mayor David Ayers, City Manager Daryl Pyle, City Attorney Bob Dowd, and Finance Director Paula Lofgren, relaying that he asked Gomez for what he asked Gomez for and asking them to comply with the law. We avoided litigation and spent months, if not years, trying to get them to comply because a lawsuit just penalizes Hanford taxpayers, as they are the ones responsible for paying the city's legal fees, Fellner said. When contacted, both Gomez and Pyle said they could not comment on pending litigation. City Attorney Mario Zamora said Fellner is asking for a document that doesn't exist and said if no such document exists, then the city is not violating the California Public Records Act. The city does not create a document that contains what every single employee specifically earns, Zamora said, and is not legally required to compile any information together in any new document. That's a bold-faced lie because they actually have their W-2s at the end of the year. I mean, for real, dude, if all they did was just print that out and black out any of the personal information, that would give them what they wanted. These people are going to get, I hope they get spanked super hard. Zamora said the documents and information Gomez provided are sufficient for Transparent California to get the information needed. One document provides city employees' names and titles, while the other document provides how much the person earns with a particular title, with how much a person with a particular title earns. Meaning, if you want to find out, you have to go to that title and you have to go to that person. You have to go to the title and then match up that person in name. I think the radiation up in that area is frying their brains. That's what I think. So Moore said he does not know what documents the city provided to Transparent California in 2014 that allowed the website to publish employee names and salary information. Fellner said he hopes the matter can be quickly resolved and that the city will embrace transparency instead of resisting it. So I wonder if this guy Fellner sent him the documents that was sent to them in 2014 and said, we want this only in 2015. And why are they playing games with this information? Why don't they want to just say what it is as public officials? Unbelievable. And I'm also going to look for Columbia Generating Station. And we are not getting anything from New Turkey Point. For those of you that are wanting to know about what's going on in Florida, we're on a need-to-know basis, and we basically don't need to know. Okay, so this is a quick little story on this Hanford space, more valuable space available for Hanford's radioactive waste. Hanford workers have freed up enough tank space in the nuclear reservation's sturdiest underground tanks for 525,000 gallons of radioactive waste. The work to evaporate liquid waste makes valuable space available to continue emptying waste from older, leak-prone single-shell tanks into the 27 double-shell tanks in service at the site. The newly available space is equivalent to about half a shell tank. Contractor Washington River Protection Solutions used Hanford's 242A evaporator to reduce the volume of waste by 210,000 gallons in the first 2 weeks of July. An evaporator campaign that ended Friday freed up 315,000 gallons of space. Wow. So let's do take a look and let's see. Let's put in Turkey Point and see if we can get any updated news. Let's see what happens. If we can just plug in and see if we can get any actual news. And no, there's absolutely nothing. It says that they didn't shut down. This is what I understand about the nuclear power plants in the path of Irma. They're not shutting the whole plant down. They're shutting one or two. The one plant that they have one on halfway shutdown at Turkey Point. But one of the units is at 100%. So we would not have known about Fukushima, folks, if it hadn't have blown up. They would not have told us if it had not blown up. They told us, in fact, how long did it take to say that there was even a nuclear meltdown? 3 months or something like that? Completely outrageous. Let's see what St. Lucie is doing. Not affected. Don't worry about it. FPL customers are not affected by the nuclear plant's partial shutdown. That's because we don't need the nuclear power facilities. That's the amazing part. They're not going to be affected. But there is no information about how this affected them at all. So it doesn't, I don't know. It says that they would weather the storm, but they're not telling us anything. It's completely insane. The abuse that this nuclear industry is doing is just beyond. Columbia Generating Station. Let's see if these people at in the Tri-Cities, if they have anything that they printed out. Columbia Generating Station returns to service out of shutdown. And what did we find today? That not only are they not shutting down, but there was a potential problem, uncontrollable mitigation. I mean, this is the containment pressure momentarily above limit specification limit. So this is really an ongoing issue. It's not a matter of if the Columbia Generating Station will have an issue. It's a matter of when and how long. So the nuclear power plant was offline for 13 days, and then it has another event this quickly. September 4th, the nuclear power plant was back up. It was down for 13 days. So if you live near a nuclear power facility, just know that you have got to take extra vitamin C, take your vitamins, do as much as you can to boost your immune system, because you're definitely being leaked on, as they say. Leaked on, I guess. I don't know. Leaked on or exposed to contamination. I guess that's we're all being exposed to contamination. My goodness gracious. Let's see. Who else do we want to find out about? Let's find out about, how's about Indian Point? Because let's see what they tell us on Indian Point leaks. Are they going to say anything to us? Let's hit the news button and see what the old Googles will tell us about. August 23rd, there's an opinion that says New York will do just fine without Indian Point's power. The next one says the Journal News says New York will have to pay plenty to keep the lights on. So that's all about the lights. It's all about keeping the power on, but no one ever talks about the harm caused by nuclear contamination. And let's, tritium, what harm does tritium cause? Tritium cause, somebody's already asked that question because it popped right up. Okay, low dosage, increased risk of mutation in cancer. That popped up immediately. So for them to tell us that we are not being affected by this is, and that we're being hysterical. Remember that story I read the other day where this guy, a biologist, said, you know, well, people are being hysterical if you have these health concerns about tritium, so don't worry about it. This is I'll read you this really quick. I'm sure that this looks like a scientific study. I'll just read you the abstract. This is from, it's called Dose Response, Human Health and Biological Effects of Tritium in Drinking Water, Prudent Policy Through Science Addressing the ODWAC New Recommendations. I think I have enough time to read just at least the introduction to this abstract. Tritium is a radioactive form of hydrogen and is a byproduct of energy production in Canadian deuterium-uranium reactors. The release of this radioactive isotope into the environment is carefully managed at CANDU facilities in order to minimize radiation exposure to the public. However, under some circumstances, small accidental releases to the environment can occur. The radiation doses to human and non-human biota from these releases are low and orders of magnitude of less than doses received from naturally occurring isotopes or from man-made activities such as medical imaging and air travel. However, there is a renewed interest in the biological consequences of low-dose tritium exposures, and a new limit for tritium levels in Ontario drinking water has been proposed. Ontario Drinking Water Advisory Council, ODWAC, issued a formal report in May 2009 in response to a request by the Prime Minister of the Environment, concluding that Ontario drinking water standard for tritium should be revised from the current 7,000 becquerels to a new low of 20 becquerels limit per liter. So they were recommending it went from 7,000 becquerels to the new low, which was never adopted, folks. It's still 7,000. In response to recommendations, an international scientific symposium held at McMaster University to address the issues surrounding this change in direction and the validity of the new policy, scientists, regulators, government officials, industrial stakeholders were present to discuss the potential health risks associated with low-level radiation exposure from tritium. The regulatory, economic, and social implications of the new proposed limits were also considered. The new recommendations assumed a linear no-threshold model to calculate carcinogenic risk associated with tritium exposure and considered tritium as a non-threshold chemical carcinogen. Both of these assumptions are highly controversial, given that recent research suggests that low-dose exposures have thresholds below which there are no observable detrimental effects. Furthermore, mutagenic and carcinogenic risk calculated from tritium exposure at 20 becquerels per liter would be orders of magnitude less than that from exposure to natural background sources of radiation. The new proposed standard would set the radiation dose limit for drinking water to 0.0003 microsieverts per year, which is equivalent to approximately three times the dose from naturally occurring tritium in drinking water. The new standard is incongruent with the national and international standards for safe levels of radiation exposure, currently set at 1 microsievert per year for the general public. Scientific research from leading authorities on the carcinogenic health effects of tritium exposure supports the notion that the current standard of 7,000 becquerels per liter is safe standard, is a safe standard for human health. So this is obviously written for the nuclear industry and by the nuclear industry. Metaphysics, this was done by McMaster University. Okay, this is the last paragraph. Policymaking for the purpose of regulating tritium levels in drinking water is a dynamic, multi-stage process that is influenced more than by science alone. Oh, really? Policymaking for the purpose of regulating tritium levels in drinking water is a dynamic, multi-stage process that is influenced more than science alone. Wow. Ethics, economics, and public perception also play important roles in policy development. However, these factors sometimes undermine the scientific evidence that should form the basis of informed decision-making. Consequently, implementing a new standard without scientific basis may lead the public to perceive that risks from tritium have been historically underestimated, which is true, they have been. It is concluded that the new recommendations is not supported by any new scientific data regarding, this is why they didn't change it, because of this report. Given the lack of cost versus benefit analysis, this type of dramatic policy change would be detrimental effects to society from an ethical, economic, and public perception perspective. Wow, that is a shock. This is how they end up doing it. So new recommendations assumed at the new threshold model. Both of these assumed a highly controversial. So what they did was they considered tritium a non-threshold chemical carcinogen. Wow. So there, what these scientists actually really did at McMaster University, they suggested in 2009 that it should go to 20 becquerels. Probably why that this happened and why this has just been completely ignored has a lot to do with the fact that it's already in our water. We really are, it's already there. We're past the 20 levels already. We have high levels of tritium in our water. That is really amazing. Is radioactive hydrogen in drinking water a cancer threat? This was from February 2014. So if we really do want to find out what tritium does cause and you're searching the internet, these are the kind of sources that you're going to get that are going to tell you. It's perfectly fine. This was 14. The EPA plans to reevaluate its standards for tritium in the water, which is why they're probably ignoring Indian Point, because there's tons of tritium in the water. Wow. So they just keep testing and allowing it to happen. This is quite a long story. I won't read it. We only have a few minutes left. This is kind of a shock. So, by the way, I thought I would let my listeners know that I am keeping a calendar that is, I think, open to the public. If you go to Age of Fission on Google Calendars, I have an open calendar. I think I've been able to do that so that you can see who is going to be booked on our show. And it's kind of an active thing where we can actually see who's coming in. I have a link at the end of it, and I believe that it works. I think what happens when we started doing this, it was like a few months ago, April or May. So you can have to scroll through forward to see who's on. So you can see the calendar and who is and is not calendared. My calendar is relatively blank right now just because I've had a million things to do and people have been out for summer. So it'll fill up as we go along. I want to thank you for listening to our show and supporting this station. I think it really does matter that some of this information get out, and I hope it encourages you to take action and actually be engaged and find out as much information as you can. And if you ever have information and you'd like to call into the show, our number is 718-717-8106. That will be available from 8 to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, Monday through Thursday. So tomorrow I'm going to have on Sheila Parks. She's Dr. Sheila Parks. She's been a longtime anti-nuke activist. We have some pretty good interviews coming up that I have not scheduled yet. I'm pretty excited, so I'll wait till they get booked, till I talk to you about it. And put your courage feet on. Take some action. Refuse to be unhappy. Find a way to make yourself appreciate the present that we have in living, because life is a gift. And no matter what they say, it's up to us. Put your courage feet on, you guys. Take some action.